What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 48 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, and joined this week by the hype master of Animal Crossing, Claire Helmberger.
Woo!
How's it going, Claire?
I am doing good. I definitely feel like the hype master, getting my 8th grade students to...
You made it through a school year. Yeah. We went on vacation for a week.
And now I'm back in summer school, so...
But you have more time off and just generally less going on, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Awesome. And in addition, we're joined by two fabulous guests making his return to the show, host of the Player Player podcast. We have Joseph Hooper. How's it going, Joseph?
What's up, guys? It's very hot in Seattle, but it is going. It is going indeed.
Well, thanks so much for jumping on this podcast with us despite the heat. Hopefully we can distract you from the blistering temperatures of the Pacific Northwest right now.
It's okay. I have a fan blowing directly into my face.
Good.
Like six
good,
inches
good, good.
Away.
Okay. Stay safe. And joining Joseph, making his third appearance on the show, we have host of the Left Behind Game Club, Cutscenes, a Video Game Movie podcast, and his new YouTube show, Video Game Trivia. Jacob McCourt.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. Third time on the show. I do too many things. Let's talk about E3.
We're happy to have you, and we're excited about all your new stuff, and I think the listeners will get a big kick out of video game trivia. We'll talk more about both your guys' shows towards the end of the podcast, but as you said, we're going to get into all things E3. Claire and I have kind of been saving all of our thoughts for this podcast. We were on vacation, but we caught up on all the press conferences, and now we're ready to talk about them. So I wanted to just kick things off. Usually we have more segmented structures to the show, but I kind of want to have more of an open discussion about our thoughts on E3. But just to kick things off, I wanted to talk about, what were some of your expectations going into the show after not having E3 in 2020 and then heading into this all-digital event? What were you expecting, and how did it live up to those expectations? Maybe starting with Jacob?
Yeah, E3 is a weird thing still. For those of you who don't know, the ESA, who runs the E3, they are technically a lobbying organization. So beyond that, they leaked a lot of data about journalists a few years ago. So... I would say reception and people's thoughts on E3 are very mixed. I think they did a great job with the stage show. Greg Miller, Golden Boy, who else was involved? Aubrey May, Michael P. Heim from GameSpot. I think the stage show was really good. My question is, in future years, if you don't have things to show, you shouldn't have a showcase. But I'm sure we're going to talk about that too.
Definitely. How about you, Joseph? What did you think?
Yeah,
and
so,
what were your expectations as well going in?
Yeah, my expectations were honestly pretty low. You know, last year E3, or I guess there was no E3, but that E3 season was kind of annoying, right? We were waiting, you know, every week during the summer for one little tidbit of news that usually didn't end up being as exciting as they hyped it up to be. So I was happy to get back to one single week, basically one single weekend where all the events were happening. But I knew COVID had just happened. I was listening to all the rumors and stuff and didn't expect anything to really blow my mind. I was just excited about what Xbox was going to show, what Nintendo was going to show. And that's kind of it. You know, I was wondering if we'd see Elden Ring, all that good stuff.
For sure.
I think exceeded my expectations a little bit. The bad shows were bad, but I also didn't expect them to be good, or didn't expect them to be present in the first place. Microsoft had, in my opinion, their best press conference probably ever. And the Nintendo Direct wasn't really my cup of tea. By the end of the day, it was pretty good. We saw Breath of the Wild too. So it was okay, you know, for an off year still, for it being all digital and stuff, but that's my opinion there.
Definitely. I definitely agree too with the sentiment of last summer's like endless. It felt like we had a press conference or an update on a game every week, and while I enjoyed that to like keep us interested during the pandemic, it felt like a lot of information to disseminate, and I did really appreciate this like week condensed of different showcases and whatnot. What did you think, Claire? And what were your expectations going in?
I had pretty low expectations because of last year. Mm-hmm. I was kind of expecting, I don't know, I just expected E3 to be like one of those weeks, but just one week, not all packed together.
Sure.
So I think with my expectations that low, I was bound to be impressed by whatever happened. And I was, for the most part, especially, I actually really liked Nintendo's show and Xbox as well. So Microsoft, sorry. and Bethesda's show. So those were the two standouts for me, for sure.
There's this, like, really fun... The one thing I didn't mention, there's this really fun land grab happening right now between, like, the E3 show and Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest, where I think that, like, he will probably expand that show to multiple days as the years go on, but I think his showcase that he put together today, this past, you know, a couple weeks ago, was very strong. And if there was a horse that I would want to pick out of, like, the E3 show and whatever Jeff Keighley does, I, like, would always put my money on Keighley.
For sure. Yeah. And that's an interesting point, too, because this was the first E3 that he wasn't involved with to any capacity. And, his Coliseum interviews and developer interviews throughout the years are such, like, a pillar of E3 to me and such, like, iconic moments, like hearing interviews with Tim Schafer or... I remember, like, Hugo Martin, the director of Doom Eternal, talking about that game leading into its release. Like, he made such a presence at E3, and to not have him at the show felt different. And I definitely agree, Jacob, that I feel like his show was so compelling, and the fact that he got such big titles. Like, he closed with Elden Ring. And Elden Ring, I don't know, that was one of my most anticipated games to see at E3, and we saw that before the show had even started at Jeff Keighley's event, which was really cool.
Yeah,
it's going to be fun to watch. Sorry, Joseph.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I think it's interesting, right? Like, I feel like this year almost proved to me that we don't really need an E3, right? Like, the Xbox press conference was not like an E3 event, right? Like, they made their own press conference. They filmed it in Washington and, you know, E3 streamed it, basically. Same with the Nintendo Direct. Like, E3 didn't really have any involvement with that. Like, all we really need is somebody to wrangle all of these companies together, so it's just not the wild, wild west all throughout summer.
Definitely.
And the thing that Jeff Keighley did well was he kind of set up a place where the smaller, more, you know, people who don't have a full showcase worth of stuff can come and show off their games and get excited and have, you know, not, you know, indie level, you know, hype announcements, not Microsoft level hype announcements, but just like that lukewarm right in the middle place. And I think that did a really good job. Oh, yeah. Look at that. That perfect naming on this podcast. That was accidental. But yeah, I think he created a show that really made a great spot for like the Elden Rings, the Borderlands trailer, stuff like that. In the years in the future, who knows, man? Like, Sony's not a part of E3. All I want is for them to have a conference around the same time, right? I don't care about the E3 branding, and I don't really care about the Summer Games Fest branding. I just want, you know, to have as condensed as possible, you know, kill the fluff, kill all the extra stuff. But yeah, we'll see how that evolves.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think only time will tell with that, how E3 will progress. I especially just want to give a shout out, though, to all the developers and all the showcases that happened. Like, I was just incredibly impressed at all the level of polish of these trailers and the games that we're seeing that have been mostly made during work from home scenarios in the last year and a half. And I was just really excited to see this lineup of games, especially with Xbox particularly, which we'll get into, seeing so many next-gen titles that I'm, like, really excited to play on Game Pass after, you know, the Xbox Series X coming out last fall is just really cool.
Yeah.
So with that, let's get into some of our specific highlights. Joseph, what were some of the trailers or announcements that got you excited?
Let's go. Okay, let me dig into my little memory bank here. Let's see. Death's Door was definitely one that kind of right out of the gate, I think it was at the Summer Games Fest opening night, really, you know, I heard about it before, I kind of forgot about it. Looking at this trailer got me hyped all over again. The fact that it's coming out pretty soon, within the next couple of months, got me very excited. And I just recently saw an article about a preview that they said they had a great time. So I'm very excited about Death's Door, indie nice. Game, Xbox exclusive. Loot River, another Xbox exclusive, I believe. Very interesting concept where you're flying around, I guess, a river, you know, fighting hordes of enemies. Very interesting. And then just overall, Xbox's showcase was, like I said, one of the best I've ever seen. You know, Breath of the Wild 2, I was excited to see. And Elden Ring and the Borderlands trailer as well. Two big ones that I was really excited to get a date on and to get like a longer look at. So I'd say those were my highlights.
Nice. Yeah, I thought Death's Door looked really cool too, especially. And I really liked the art style of that one. It looked really unique and different. I'm super excited for Elden Ring as well. I always tell Claire that I like want to try to get into every Souls game, and I try, and then I just fail miserably, but I enjoy it for some reason, and I keep going back to it. So I'm excited to see what like the open world formula for Elden Ring brings to this game. How about for you, Jacob? What stuck out to you?
So I was really... I loved the Microsoft Bethesda showcase. I think it is probably the best showcase that has ever appeared at an E3. I'm gonna put that out there. I am not someone who got excited by everything. I'm throwing it out there. I'm saying it's the best thing that's ever happened at E3. You think back to past years, and sure, they were announcing consoles. I would even put the caveat and say, like, the best showcase where they didn't announce a console, like, bar none, 100%, one of the best showcases ever. I was really excited about Outer Worlds 2. I am not, a huge RPG person, and I adored the first Outer Worlds, so to have them announce the second one, I was like, cool, all in. Appreciated how they said, like, hey, 27 out of these 30 games are going to be on Game Pass day one, which, I mean, it's now a meme in the community, but I super appreciate, like, even being able to try, like, hey, I'm going to love Psychonauts 2, download it day one. 12 minutes, download day one. But there's stuff like Back 4 Blood, where if that's on Game Pass, I'm going to try that, where I wouldn't necessarily try it in past times. Contraband, same thing.
For sure.
I got really excited by the Nintendo showcase, specifically three titles, WarioWare, Get It Together.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of WarioWare, so to see that come back, hell yeah. They closed with, or one of the last games they talked about was Advance Wars 1+2 reboot.
I did not see that coming at all. I was so excited.
Super excited about that. And even Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania, which I guess is kind of a reimagining of the first three Super Monkey Ball games. So to see those things come through in the Nintendo Direct,
Wait, is it a reimagining? It looks exactly like the game I played from Blockbuster.
I think
it
it's a remaster.
It looks real same, but I'm kind of okay with it, if I'm being honest. Like, I'll still probably play it.
Fair enough,
yeah.
Fair enough.
I think it's going to be, like, really good. I don't know if it's a reimagining or a remake of the first three, but, like, those games are tough to find. So, give me that. So, that's the stuff that excited me most. But I watched some of the other smaller showcases, like the Wholesome Direct. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, but
definitely.
Luke, Claire, what did you guys love?
For sure. I think I'm along the same lines. I really loved Microsoft's press conference. We were watching it while we were visiting my parents, so my parents watched it too, and they grew up like following E3 coverage here and there as I was watching it in the house. And my dad even tuned into the fact, he's like, wait a second, so you're paying a monthly fee and you get access to all of these games? And that, like, kind of blew his mind. Yeah. He just, like, we were thinking back to, like, me as a kid of, like, oh, Dad, can we get this game X, Y, or Z for $60? And we'd make it work or do it. But with this, to have access to so many titles, like, he was, like, kind of beside himself. I was like, Dad, it's like Netflix. And, like, he just thought it was the coolest thing, which was really cool to see someone of, like, his generation who, like, enjoys video games but isn't, like, as immersed in the culture as we are, to see him, like, really excited. I'll give his two shout-outs. He was very excited about Flight Simulator. He loves, like, looking at, like, travel shows or different things like that, or, like Top Gear type, like, automotive things. So, like, Flight Simulator is totally his type of game that he would love. And then he was also really excited about Sea of Thieves. because he's big into sailing. Yeah. So the Pirates of the Caribbean content was very up his alley.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out specifically to the Nintendo press conference. I leapt out of my seat when they announced Metroid Dread. Mm. I could not believe that was a thing. I love the Metroid games. I love 2D exploration. And it looks really cool. And just, it's such a weird story of like being announced in 2005 and now coming out in 2021. And just like the journey that game has been on. I'm excited to check it out. And I really hope it's good. But it looks really cool. So that was like my biggest surprise of the show, I would say.
Yeah.
Claire, what were some of your highlights?
So that too, seeing Metroid and all of Nintendo's Direct, I felt like looking forward to it. We were like, well, I hope they do X, Y, and Z, and maybe they'll do this, and maybe they'll do this. And I feel like they just delivered on expectations. And
they had the most surprises, things I definitely wasn't expecting to see.
Yeah.
And they also had, I think Microsoft was the best, like, paced show.
Yeah.
But Nintendo, at least for me, sorry to cut you off, Claire, but just to toss this in, Nintendo had the most games I want to play, like, right now, if I could jump into some of those.
Yeah, I was definitely hyped for, like, the highest percentage of games from both of those events. And I just felt, like, not disappointed by the Nintendo Direct, which I feel like oftentimes is not the case. And so, yeah, Breath of the Wild 2, and the, I'm totally blanking, Super Mario Party, the compilation of all the Super Mario parties.
Superstars?
Yeah, Superstars.
Yeah,
Superstars. The, like, collection of the Nintendo 64 maps, that'll be really cool.
That'll be really fun, I'm looking forward to that, too. I also...
That's a big one that we play with our families and stuff, so that'll be
That's gonna be super fun.
Throw in the rotation.
I was also, the Sea of Thieves... Pirates of the Caribbean expansion, I was just like, okay, I've never felt like I need to play this game, and now I do, because it looks super fun, especially seeing gameplay of it since
Everyone's
then.
Gotten into it like this really last like, week or two, and I'm compelled to jump in too. I haven't played it, but I kind of want to now. It looks fun.
Yeah, and I heard someone else talking about it, saying that like it's more like single-player focused and more instance-focused, but like that's what I want. Like, give me that.
I want a pirate adventure, and it sounds like that's what it finally is.
Yeah. For sure. And then just the more I hear about Starfield, the more excited I get. So looking forward to that one.
That was a cool trailer. Yeah, despite not showing a lot, I was into it.
Yeah, same. The vibe. The vibe was there.
Y'all, I have a confession to make. I have never played an Elder Scrolls game.
Wow.
Yeah. It is like one of the weird... things.
Despite Skyrim being on literally everything, that's not me throwing shade. I'm just, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just something that kind of intimidates me. So maybe, like, I like space games more. So, like, if it's anywhere in between The Outer Worlds and Mass Effect, like, I will probably play it.
Wait, but have you?
I'm gonna.
Have you played Fallout?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Joseph.
Fallout.
I have played. I've not played a Fallout either.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Very weird.
Claire has not played Fallout either, but Skyrim is one of her all-time faves.
My brothers are super into both of them.
Yeah.
And that's like the only two games they played for like 6 years.
I played The Outer Worlds and loved it though. So like, I think there's something there.
Yeah. I'm with you, Jacob, though, because I'm not a huge fantasy guy, but at the time I got really into Skyrim just at the sheer like, cool ability to explore the world and see different things and wander, and it was a great podcast game for me of just like exploring locations and like seeing cool things. But I'm definitely more excited for Starfield, like the idea of like I'm imagining like a Mass Effect level of world building, but you can explore to your heart's content, and the way it like your plane, or not your plane, but your spaceship's taking off and things like that. Like it kind of gives me No Man's Sky vibes, which is cool, but yeah, I think it looks fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed Outer Worlds as well, and it's hitting on similar notes.
Yeah, I've only beaten one like, you know, Bethesda RPG, and that was Fallout 3, but I played a lot of them, New Vegas, 4, Skyrim, a little bit of Oblivion. I think what they do well is, you know, build that world out, build that lore, build that sense of like you're really like living some story. Like you pick up notes, like you're looking at the stories of the vaults and the people that lived in these vaults. Like you're the Dragonborn and you have this quest, but there's so many other like clans and organizations and towns and guilds that are going on. I think that they knock it out of the park every time in terms of the world building. So, you know, allegedly the trailer we saw was in engine. I thought it looked fantastic compared to previous, you know, Bethesda open world RPGs. So if that's kind of the level of graphics we can expect to get, even if it's just mostly in the cutscenes or something like that, and they, you know, are consistent with their level of world building, giving us something like a Mass Effect type open world, man, that's going to be killer. That's going to be killer.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I throw out the Mass Effect comparison, like, it'll probably be a very different game, but that's, like, one of my favorite space sci-fi stories, so I would love if it even touched that level of, like, world building and story. But honestly, to your point, Joseph, about their world building, I feel like Bethesda's perfect at building games where you kind of make your own story out of it. Like, the main story is always fine, but, like, the real story is, like,
the adventure you have along the
way. Yeah, it sounds cliche, but like that's the best part of their games, I think.
100%.
Right on.
Very good, very good. After seeing Starfield, Jacob, do you feel more compelled to jump into other Bethesda titles, or are you like, I'm going to wait for this one and this will be... What do you think?
Well, one of the big cool things was that they also said, hey, we've got 10 new Bethesda titles that are on Xbox Game Pass. I think they said Fallout 1, 2, Tactics on PC, and then they put out a couple more that were not on Game Pass yet. So truly, like, what am I waiting for? I think I played about an hour of Fallout 3 and just bounced off of it. I played, like, the same thing, like an hour of Prey, kind of bounced off. I recognize these are good games, but just in the moment I was like, I don't want to play this. So I think I might go back to New Vegas because like that's an Obsidian title. I play The Outer Worlds. Maybe that'll be my vibe, but I think I'm overdue to like at least try that's Fallout. Fair. I'd play Fallout over like either Skyrim or Oblivion, but I think I just need to bite the bullet and do it. And with Game Pass for $9.99, you can do it.
For sure. I think if you enjoyed Outer Worlds, you would enjoy New Vegas, and you can kind of see, it's fun to see like the studio's origin of like what they learned from that game that then ended up in Outer Worlds. But I think my favorite Fallout would probably be 3. I really thought the DC setting was really cool, and seeing like iconic US monuments and things like in a post-apocalyptic world was really cool. But as far as like a mechanic standpoint, I think 4 is their strongest game in terms of the like gameplay and how it actually like feels, even though that game is still buggy as hell, which yeah. You'll find Bethesda games are just kind of always buggy as hell.
Yeah, they're kind of broken,
but you overlook it a little yeah. bit.
But it's funny. It's all in good humor.
Look at this cheese wheel. It's rolling down the hill. Don't you love that?
Oh my god.
Look at that dragon that you killed 50 in-game hours ago.
Have we told the cheese wheel story?
It just drops out of the sky and lands in the river and then just kind of bobs along for a
while. It's fine. That's supposed to happen.
That's fine.
Have we told the cheese wheel story on the podcast?
I don't know, but you sure like to tell it a lot, so it's possible.
Well, I think it's funny. Lol.
That was the most couple thing I've ever heard in my life. Yeah, I love that story. The 1,000th time you tell it. But here, I want to hear it. Though.
Okay.
No, well, go ahead.
Now
they
want to hear it
because
I set the stage.
Yeah,
okay, I'm sorry. I'll subject Claire to this one more time. When we first started dating, we were hanging out at her mom's house, and her little brother's Xbox was there, and her old save of Skyrim was on the Xbox, and she was like, "Oh, I'm gonna go shower. If you want to play some Xbox, go ahead." And so I fired up her Skyrim file, and I was just running around doing stuff, and I picked up a sword, I think it was, and I was instantly
over-encumbered,
because Claire just loves to collect endlessly in games, and I went into her inventory, and she had, like, 200 cheese wheels.
It was...
No
it
exaggeration.
It was 20.
It was a lot. It was a lot of cheese wheels, and I dropped one, just so that I could, like, walk, and then when you came out of the shower, I was like, oh, just so you know, I got rid of some of your cheese wheels so that I could continue playing the game, and you were very upset about the cheese wheels.
I was like, why didn't you get rid of the, like, brooms and buckets?
You were like, why didn't you drop the dragon scales and, like, the things that are worth, like, lots of gold?
At a certain point in the game, it's harder to find milk than it is to find dragons. Well, and you were
very deep into the crafting, so I understand, but it was just very funny to me. So every time I think of cheese wheels in games, I think of that story.
Well, I'm glad to see that you guys survived the cheese wheel apocalypse in your relationship.
You know, it was a tumultuous time, and
I forgave him. I forgave him. It took work, but we got there.
My favorite part of that story is Luke saying it was 200 cheese wheels, no exaggeration, and then Claire immediately saying it's 20. It's like the biggest exaggeration possible.
It's a zero. It's an extra zero.
But like, you had a lot of, like, you had so much stuff. Like, you had fully upgraded your inventory, but you still had, you were instantly over encumbered. So, but that's kind of how you play games. Because, like, Animal Crossing, Subnautica, any games where you're, like, collecting and amassing items to then do things with, that's your jam.
I'm an in-game hoarder. It's a thing.
Well, on that note, back to some E3 stuff. I'm curious, after all of these announcements that we saw, was there any trailer that changed your mind about a game? Like, something that you're like, oh, I don't really care about this game, but then you saw a trailer at this year's E3, and now you're really excited to check it out upon release?
You know,
I have one, if no... Joseph, do you... Go ahead.
I have some that aren't very exciting, like... Back for Blood, I think I'm a little more interested in now that it was confirmed for Game Pass and now that we saw a little bit more for it. Another one that looked pretty cool that I probably still won't play is it's a game that looks exactly like Friday the 13th. I think it's Evil Dead. I think it's Evil Dead. And I was like, I don't really care about this. And I saw the trailer, I'm like, man, this looks like really, really well done. Really well done. And if it wasn't, you know, if I played these types of games, I probably would buy it instantly. Looked really cool. Other than that, I was kind of, you know, either more impressed or, you know, it's fine type vibes during the whole thing.
For sure. Do you have one to throw out, Claire?
Sure. I'll throw out Starfield, because up until... you know, a couple weeks ago when we saw the new trailer, I was just like, why can't this game be the next Elder Scrolls game? Why does it have to be this game? But after seeing it, I'm actually really excited to check it out and see this new world and have, like, see if it... Because people have said it's like Skyrim, but sci-fi in space. So
I think Todd Howard said that in an interview at E3, and the internet, like, exploded. Yeah, everyone was like, oh my god, that's exactly what we want.
Yeah. So I'm, like... infinitely more excited than I was before. So that's my big one.
How about for you, Jacob?
I think my big one, and this is a game that, like, was not on my radar at all, was Stalker 2. Like, that is not a game that I would ever touch. And then I saw it. I understand that it's a survival game, and the trailer was maybe, like, a smidge misleading to say, like, hey, this is kind of like Metro, when actually it's not that at all. It's more about survival. But it's on Game Pass. It's coming out in April of 22. And, like, I might as well try it because the shooting looks super dope. So, like, that was one that was a zero before E3 started. And I'm like, maybe I install that and play it for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Graphically, it looks really impressive too, like the lighting and the, like, foliage as it's like running through. It looked really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And another one that just kind of continued to, like, push my interest in the series was, I've not played Life is Strange yet. It is a series that I have the collection on my wall right over here, but I've not touched it yet. And watching True Colors, the trailer for that, each time I see it, I'm like, okay, this is a game for me. I need to play the series. True Colors got me even more excited for the latest iteration.
Right on.
So,
super awesome games. So.
You know, I wanted to call out something, right? I think something interesting that has happened this past E3 and kind of over the past couple of years. This, you know, I said this was Microsoft's best E3 showcase ever for me. And I think a big reason for that is they really changed the way that Xbox Game Pass subscribers look at press conferences, right? When I look at Nintendo or Sony or literally any other conference, it's kind of like, okay, every game is an advertisement and I have to be sold whether I'm going to buy this or not. It may look cool, but is it worth my money level cool, right? With Xbox Game Pass, when I was watching the Xbox showcase, everything I saw was like, okay, is this something I even want to try? And going in with that mindset really made it so I could, you know, kind of let my walls down and get excited about everything and be like, oh man, this will be really cool to play for a weekend, or maybe this might be my next multiplayer game. So, you know, I want to give Microsoft a lot of credit for that, where, you know, the game has literally changed, right? Like, I have Game Pass. Now all they have to do is show me games that look, you know, fun, like for a weekend. It doesn't have to be, you know, a $60 sell. Like, you know, I don't have to pick the one or two games I'm going to buy out of the showcase. Like, I can try them all. So, you know, shout out to Microsoft. You know, it definitely has me looking forward to any time they have showcases coming up. Whereas with other companies and other showcases, it's still kind of like, all right, you know, this may look cool, but it really has to impress me for me to drop $70 at this point, or even $60 or whatever it is. So I just wanted to call that out.
Games in Canada are $90. And on on PS5 and Xbox Series X, or sorry, on PS5, they are over $100. So, like, I have to really make, like, decisions to say, like, cool, Ratchet & Clank looks dope. $100? Maybe I'll wait. So, you're right. Game Pass changed the game.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, and like I was saying with, like, my parents watching earlier, like, they were just imagining if we had had access to that as a kid. And I played a lot of games as a kid. Like, we made it work. My parents got me games, or I traded stuff in, or I borrowed stuff from friends. Like, I played everything, but it took some doing. But, like, with something, I love the phrase you used, Joseph, when you said letting your walls down, of just being able to get excited about every game, because there wasn't this barrier to having to buy the game in order to check it out. Like, that is truly a game changer, and it really needs to be celebrated. I also want to call out, I love the way Microsoft structured their conference with the way they showed a ton of different games, but then in the days following their showcase, they had the extended look that Paris Lilly hosted, where they kind of dove into more games specifically and did some developer interviews and things like that. Like, just do that. That's the perfect format for me, and that's, I really enjoyed experiencing their games that way this
E3. Yeah, and Paris needs to host more things. Like, that's just, let's
he's
just say
dope.
That.
He's dope. Dude, he's so great. Good.
Yeah. So good. Yeah, I mean, like, kind of bouncing off what you just said, like, I mean, this is why I can nerd out about this Microsoft showcase for so long, because not only did they change the game and how you're looking at these games, how you get excited about these games, but absolutely, like, when Nintendo has a 3-hour Treehouse Direct, I'm like, I'm not watching this freaking 8-hour. I mean, even last year where Xbox had like an Xbox ID showcase that was literally like 12 hours, I was like, I'm not watching this. They did it perfectly this time, where they were like, hey, it's an extended showcase. It's what, like an extra 90 minutes. And they had really good content in there. They brought back Xbox Design Labs, which is huge, a really cool announcement.
For sure.
That, you know, if you don't care about anything else, that's really something to get excited about if you, like, tuned in and watched this conference. So, you know, even when we're talking about the additional extra showcase that was days later, I feel like it all complemented each other very nicely. And, you know, as an Xbox fan, I couldn't have been happier, right? You know, there's a lot of times where I'm watching a showcase, I'm like, this was cool, but they dropped the ball here. You know, they didn't need to show 30 minutes of Call of Duty like they usually do. They didn't need to bring out, you know, Michael Vick to play Xbox on stage or whatever. But
the
this
car
time,
from Forza rolls.
They didn't need to drive
stage,
a car like... out. Exactly.
Verizon's talking about esports. Like, we're good.
So good, man. So good this year.
For
yeah,
sure.
I agree. I think they set the bar incredibly high, and I'm just really excited to play all their games. We also didn't talk about Halo at all, but I'm really excited for Halo. I thought especially the multiplayer showing, looks so much fun and gives me those Halo 1 vibes of playing LAN parties with my friends. And I think it being free to play is a huge game changer as well. Like, I think Microsoft is just really reading the market well right now. And we're finally seeing the fruits of, like, all of those collaborations and deals that happened years ago, like, starting to come out now and really seeing that, yeah, they have a plan and it's working.
Yeah, there's no studio I want to see succeed more than 323, who's, like, working on Halo Infinite. 343, thank you. because they have gone through heck. They've gone through so much trouble. That game looked not great a year ago. It looks like they're turning it around. It's going to be free to play. I think it's going to get a following again. And I really hope that the game's good. Like, truly, out of all games this year, that is the one that I hope lands. Because I'm still not sure.
Yeah, it's one of those that, like, if I allow myself to get really excited, it's my most anticipated game. Like, if it's great, get out of town. I'm going to be so excited. But I think it at least looks good at this point. Whereas I think before it was questionable, but I think they've... Especially with, like, I was geeking out about all the, like, customizations and things they showed in the multiplayer showcase. Like, that stuff just looked really cool. And that's kind of what I want to play. I've gotten really into multiplayer games this year. Maybe it was because not being able to see friends, like, we just started squadding up in different games. And so having another one to add to the rotation is just really exciting.
Yeah, I'm a big Halo guy. Like, one of my first online games ever was Halo 2. And, same. You know, my last memories of Halo, unfortunately, you know, besides the Master Chief Collection, fortunately, are like me playing Halo and them introducing a completely new race of beings and me just holding the controller, looking at the screen, like, literally, what am I doing right now? What is this? You know, it just did not hit, along with the Xbox One launch. It's just like, you know, took the steam out of everything. So, you know, looking at it, you know, this a couple weeks ago and seeing the multiplayer really hitting that hard nostalgic feel for that Halo 3 multiplayer that I loved, really got me hyped. Like, you know, if the story is trash, I'm going to be disappointed. But if that multiplayer is good, that is almost good enough to make me say, all right, you know, this is much better than what we've gotten in the past 5 years or whatever.
I just wonder what the retail model looks like on that thing. So multiplayer is free to play. There is some sort of campaign. Game Pass day one, like the poster child for the Xbox Series X and Game Pass. It'll be at retail. Are they going to charge $70 or $60 for that box? It's a question for November, I guess.
I mean, they are, but also it almost is like a Game Pass advertisement in a way. Like,
yeah.
I don't, right.
Like, how many sales do they actually expect to make at full retail? Like, I can't imagine it's a lot. Like, I don't even know how long this campaign will be, but, you know, when you look at every previous Halo title, campaign and multiplayer, are you going to say that the past campaigns, every past campaign is going to be like a fraction of what this is now? It may be, because it is an open world, and, you know, it's, you know, they say it's different and all this stuff, it's a sandbox. But I'm like, you know, the $60 price tag, I think they're probably gonna just sneak away with this one and swipe it under the rug.
Yeah, the 20% of people who don't know about Game Pass who are gonna get it at retail, like,
right,
they'll buy a $60 box, I guess.
Yeah. I could see them adding like some kind of, you get this number of, like, cosmetic points to spend in multiplayer if you buy the box, or you get an exclusive skin or something, I don't know, just to, like, ease it. But I feel like for the people buying the box, those are, like, the moms and dads going out for Christmas that don't even really understand Game Pass or, like, the Xbox ecosystem.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember, Claire, with your little brothers, like, I told your mom about Game Pass probably like a year or so ago, and once I explained it to her, she was like, oh, why would I ever buy them a game again? I'm just gonna get a year of Game Pass,
right? That's awesome.
Like, I think once people understand the messaging, Xbox could probably move away from retail box copies, at least of their first party stuff. But I don't know, that's just a
and not give away
a conversation, you know, for another day.
20-30% of their profit to retailer to distribute box, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's probably going to be just kind of like a good faith, like with the gamers type thing for the foreseeable future, because there are still a lot of people that like to own their games. I think that's a big argument about Game Pass and digital gaming in general, where people are like, I want to own it. I want to have it. Like, I want to know I own it. And technically you still don't really own it. Like you like there's a lot of intricacies to that, but you know, I feel like people will throw a fit, you know, they learned from the Xbox One launch is all I'll say. Like, you know, taking away, you know, freedoms from gamers and requiring certain things like always online didn't go well in the past. So they'll probably just keep it around, even though they don't necessarily need to. Oh, did I cut out? Am I no longer here?
You're cutting out a little bit, Joseph, on our end.
Oh, it's okay. Go ahead and keep going then.
Now I don't hear. Oh. You're good now. We can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. I was just going to say continue on.
I think you went into robot voice a little bit for a second.
My audacity caught it. The fans will hear it. Don't worry.
All good. Okay, cool. All good. I'll edit the part where I was like, you're cutting out. Get rid of this. Anyway, I totally forgot what I was going to say next.
Segue into the next item?
Segue into the next question. Oh, wait, there was one more game I wanted to throw out that we didn't talk about that the trailer totally changed my mind on. It was Riders Republic in the Ubisoft press conference. I'm a huge fan of like SSX and like the PS2 era of those games, or like Tony Hawk games, and I played Steep, which was a Ubisoft game from a couple years ago where they tried to do like extreme sports and like kind of an MMO setting, and it tried to be really realistic, and that's not what I enjoy about that type of game. I like the arcadey, zany fun of an SSX or a Tony Hawk. But when I saw the trailer for Riders Republic, it looks like that's more of the vibe they're going for. It looked really action-packed, it looked really fun. I heard Snowbike Mike of Kind of Funny raving about it, and it just looks like a really fun game to jump into with friends, and hits that kind of like arcadey sports zaniness that I'm totally about. So I'm really excited to check that one out when it launches.
It feels like a pseudo sequel to Amped 3 on the 360.
I feel like it's been a while since we had like a zany extreme sports game like that, and I think it looks really cool. Yeah. And I hope all the like multiplayer stuff works, because the idea of having like a hub world that you can fuck around in and then you go and do like different events, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, Ubisoft isn't like, well, I mean, they've got The Division, but like a lot of what they do is those big expansive single player worlds. So I really hope this one works out of the box. Truly, I do.
Me too. And we didn't touch on Ubisoft a lot. I don't really have a lot to say about them other than Riders Republic. I think Far Cry looks promising, but I'm not like overly excited about it. And I thought the Avatar game was a nice surprise, but I'm not a particularly huge fan of that property, so I wasn't super amped about that one either.
We're like, it's pretty.
Yeah.
You're telling me.
Yeah. I mean, this year
you're not excited about that movie that came out a decade ago. No way.
A movie that hasn't gotten a sequel since that first one, they've announced movies 2 through 5. Joseph, you're not.
I mean, you know, one day when that sequel comes, I'll have my Avatar Ubisoft game, and I'll be ready. I'll be ready. Sorry, Jacob, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please. Riders Republic, Far Cry 6 this year, Mario and Rabbids, whatever the
Mario Rabbids look dope. Sparks of Hope, I think, is the.
Yeah.
It has like very galaxy vibes and looks really fun.
I'm actually playing the first one right now, and
the first one's awesome.
It's really fun. It's cool to like every night just like play for 10 or 15 minutes, like play 2 levels and then go to bed. Like it's a lot of fun, so I'm excited for Sparks of Hope, and then obviously the Avatar game. That's kind of Ubisoft's slate for
the takeaways. Yeah.
Like 2 years. I'm sure there's going to be more stuff, but that's the big stuff. Splinter Cell anime on Netflix got me more excited than what was in that Ubisoft press conference.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead, Jess. No, you're fine.
I was very lukewarm on all of those games. I did that one on purpose, guys. I did that one on purpose. yeah, I mean, like, we knew about everything for the most part that was being shown. Like, for me personally, had kind of a lull when we were talking about Aerosmith Plus or Guitar, whatever it was, Plus. I was just like, man, this is an okay showcase.
This is the new way to learn guitar. Like, I don't come on, man. No.
I don't own a guitar, just, let alone this game or subscription. Like
as a musician, just go learn guitar. Like, I'll teach you guitar. You don't need this game. I'm sorry. I haven't played it, so I don't want to shit on it. But like, it just seems like an odd thing to spend time on during the press conference. I don't know.
Yeah. Anytime someone asks me, like, "Hey, you're a music teacher. I want to learn guitar. What should I do?" I'm just like, you need a guitar and YouTube, and then you're good, basically.
Or a an in-person
teacher.
No,
I know. COVID specifically, they don't want to pay a bunch of online lessons, you pay a bunch of money, you just go on YouTube.
I like the idea of, the play-along tracks, though. That seems cool, but I don't know. That's the way true. They showed it was very odd. It was, but that's our, music teacher rant
long.
Aside.
It was a long thing. Anyway.
Yeah, very, very mid, I just feel like it was fine for a Ubisoft forward, but for an E3 press conference, I feel like it didn't really have that heat that I was looking for during that weekend. But, you know, if this is how they wanted to do it, this is how they wanted to do it, I won't complain. It wasn't as bad as, a lot of the other big companies. So
yeah, I was surprised, though, we didn't see the Star Wars game that Massive is working on. They're the studios behind The Division.
Mm.
They announced that couple months back. We also didn't see the Indiana Jones game that Machine Games is working on. That was my big hyped prediction for the Xbox press conference, was that we were going to see that. This segues into my next question, which was going to be, was there a game that you were really hoping to see that wasn't at the show? Joseph, do you have any thoughts to kick us off?
I mean, I had some pipe dreams that I am pretty positive are not in the works, and they're both Bethesda related. I went to see a Dishonored 3 because I love that franchise. One of my favorite franchises.
That would be cool.
And same for Wolfenstein 3, where I'm not the biggest Wolfenstein fan, but the sequels really got me and pulled me in, and I'm very excited to see how that saga wraps up. So I would have liked one of those two games. Other than that, I am interested to see all of these other AAAs that Microsoft kind of teased a year ago, but I knew that, we're really far away from seeing those, so I expect to see them maybe next year, so I didn't really have my hopes up.
Definitely. How about for you, Jacob?
Yeah, there wasn't really anything. Of course you have your games where you're like, man, I really wish they would make a sequel to the Kirby Air Ride, or hey, man, do you remember Custom Robo on the GameCube? Would love another one of those. But there was nothing that I was was it weird that Kirby wasn't at E3 and that Nintendo hasn't said anything about Kirby in a little while? Yes, because Kirby's usually the franchise where they say let's try this innovative thing or try something entirely different because Kirby's malleable and squishy. But no, there's nothing really that I was dying to see. Obviously, we have our wish list of things we want to see forever, but I was pretty happy with E3, truly.
How about for you, Claire?
Yeah, same. I have my Elder Scrolls 6 and my I Would Love a Remaster of Super Mario Galaxy 2, so I can actually play it.
Yes.
But I wasn't expecting to see those things, so
definitely.
I made this joke before E3 happened. We were having this conversation, and I was just Subnautica Below Zero is already out. I'm not really
Claire's
I don't need anything else for a couple
listeners,
weeks.
Listeners, stay
I'm
tuned
good.
For the solo podcast where it's just 2 hours of Claire talking about Subnautica.
I made a joke that I'd never wanted to stream a game before, but then I was like, I could just sit here and just talk about how awesome this game is while I play it for
honestly,
the rest
I
of my life.
Honestly, I think those would be very entertaining streams. I'm going to be honest.
I would subscribe for $1 on Patreon for that.
Just watch me ram my ship just full speed into rocks.
Well, I think it's more your reactions to things. As you're discovering things, whether it's exciting because you discovered something awesome, or it's scary because you found a giant monster, you're just entertaining. It's fun.
That's fair. I appreciate that. Thank you. Anyway. That's my 2 cents. What about you?
Okay. This is the only hill I will die on, because I agree with all of you that I think E3 was excellent. I saw a ton of games, a good mix of like things I was expecting to see, a couple surprises here and there, like very pleased overall. The only thing that I was upset about at the end was, where is Sam Fisher? Where is Splinter Cell? What did you do to him, Ubisoft? Is he dead? He's dead. Like, he's dead. I'm going to need a moment. No, I'm kidding.
You could do so much with him. Like, an open world Splinter Cell. Splinter Cell Conviction was fantastic. Do another one of those. Splinter Cell open world game. He's so malleable. You could do things to him as a video game character, and they aren't doing anything with him. I don't know.
Oh, I don't. You can do a lot of things. You can do a mobile game DLC. You can do a Rainbow Six Siege DLC. That's what they're doing.
But that's the problem, Joseph, is you say he's dead, but he's kind of not, because they keep putting him in these little things that aren't the things that we want. And, you know, I know it's like wishful thing. I just want it to happen, and I'm just going to keep saying it until someone at least acknowledges that it's not going to happen, or it happens. Because I would really like it. I loved Conviction. I even liked, what was the...
Blacklist?
I think it was Blacklist. Yeah, it was on PS3 and 360. I thought that was a really fun game, but I think it... I'm imagining, like, a Metal Gear Solid 5 level open world Splinter Cell game, I think could be really dope.
What about a side-scrolling Mark of the Ninja-esque Splinter Cell game? I will give that one to you for free, Ubisoft. Mark of the Ninja. Splinter Cell.
I would play the shit out of that.
Do
that
it.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're blowing my mind with that one.
Also, I just came to my mind three things that I actually missed. One, Cuphead game. Where's the DLC? Where's the DLC?
Oh, yeah.
I've been waiting for like 5 years, probably more. Silk Song. I know they said it wasn't going to be at E3. Why not? Where the heck is that game? I know it's done. It has to be at least, you know, 99%.
Haven't they said this
done.
Year? Is it still dated for this year? Or have they said
I
otherwise?
I honestly have no idea at this point. I have no idea when this game is coming out. And then finally, this is not a game, but the Switch Pro. Come on, man. All those rumors teasing me, telling me it was going to come before E3. It didn't even come at E3. What the heck was up with that? Come on, man. Robbed me.
Friend of the show, Zach Hartzman, tweeted the other day, and he was like, all of you guys who said we'd have the Switch Pro announcement by now, how you doing? And I was just like, oh, man. You troll. But yeah, he's right. I thought we were going to get it at this E3. I thought that was going to be the big end thing. But it kind of makes sense with COVID that I imagine production of a new system for Nintendo is probably pretty tricky to navigate.
Sure.
And the way Nintendo operates with things, I don't know. They take their time. But yeah, I was kind of bummed to not see that as well.
Yeah, I mean, chip shortages are affecting everything from cars to... video equipment. So like,
sure,
it's we're in a tough spot.
Definitely. Yeah. With that, along the same lines of a game that was missing, did you all feel like PlayStation's absence had affected the vibe of E3, or were you disappointed at all to not see PlayStation there? Claire, how about you? Do you want to kick us off?
It sounded like.
So, oh, sorry, Joseph,
go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, I've been going first for a long time. I'll wrap it up. Claire, please go.
I was just going to say that since we kind of viewed it in a scattered sort of way, I didn't really notice the absence in the moment. But then looking back, I was like, oh, yeah, we didn't have any new announcements or stuff for the PlayStation.
Sure.
But we also just... I can't remember how long ago it was because the last month and a half have been absolutely crazy. But we just had the Sony
State of Play, the Horizon.
With the Horizon and all that stuff. So
that kind of lessened the blow for me. I think if we hadn't had that, I would have felt the absence a little more. But it was at least like, here's one of our bigger projects that you're excited about. Like, check it out. And it looks amazing and I'm really excited about it. I think for me, I was just a little disappointed as... Like, I love Xbox and I love all video games, but, like, the Sony exclusives of the last generation are some of my, like, favorites, and I'm always excited to see what they're working on. And, Jacob, to your point that Xbox had the best showcase at E3 this year, I definitely agree that it's up there, but one of my favorites was, I don't remember what year it was, but it was the E3 that Sony showed God of War, Spider-Man, Last of Us Part 2, and I think Ghost of Tsushima all in the same slate.
Is that the one where they were like switching sets like within that showcase?
Yeah,
where they went,
they like
a
started
top.
In the barn and then they went
so
to the
cool.
Like just the novelty of that plus the quality of games that they were showing. And with those specific titles, I saw them and I just knew, I was like, these are going to be great games, which I don't always feel when I see game announcements, but I just like somehow, like, I had this premonition. I felt like I knew that these were going to be some of my favorite games, and they were. So that's like an iconic E3 memory. So that felt a little missing this E3 for me, but not in a way that like detracted from the show, if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I'm just excited to see what PlayStation is going to do. Like, are they going to do a PlayStation experience this year? Because we're about to somehow get back to live events again. I mean, PAX West is happening, vaccinated or not. PlayStation experience will probably happen too. I just want to know what they're going to do. Because, like, that Horizon showcase, great, but are you going to do something in September, in October? Do you have something big planned for the Game Awards? Because what's really coming for PlayStation now that Ratchet and Clank and Returnal are out? I can't really tell you.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I feel like, you know, PlayStation, it wasn't that I was missing PlayStation. It was more of like, you know, they kind of missed a great opportunity to do what they usually do and follow up all the announcements with their own big announcements and kind of steal the show and be kind of like the last taste on your tongue at the end of the E3 week. I think they really left a big vacuum so that Microsoft could come out here and say, you know, look at this showcase, look at Starfield, look at Game Pass, and have everybody, you know, talk about Microsoft. Oh, this is so good. What a good value. And then follow up with Xbox Design Labs, all that stuff. Like, oh, wow, all these services. Even with Nintendo, you know, Nintendo's always going to do their own thing. But, you know, they kind of shared the space. And I feel like this year more than ever would have been, you know, a great year for Sony to dominate, saying, look at all these cool things that we have. Look, this is how you do a showcase. Like, you know, Xbox might have had one of the best E3 conferences I've ever seen. But that PlayStation 5, like, launch thing showcase that they did, like, last year, was really awesome. It was one of my favorite presentations of all time, favorite gaming presentations. So, yeah, I agree with Jacob when I think, like, what's coming next? Like, we know Microsoft's next couple years. What does the PlayStation's next couple years look like? We got cross-gen titles coming up with God of War and Forza, and that's cool. That's awesome. But, like, what's the big showpiece? What's the Starfield killer? What are these other big titles? And I thought it was super weird, right? Like, they had this Horizon State of Play right before E3, so I was like, I would assume they would save this for a big presentation if they had a big presentation coming within the next month. And then they announced that God of War is officially delayed. Horizon might not make it in this year. So what does that leave us with? Deathloop? Kena Bridge of Spirits? Like, what does their showcase this year look like? So, you know, I'm not gonna sound the alarms just yet. I feel like PlayStation, you know, always has cards up their sleeve. They always have some quality. But don't let that market share slip, Jim Ryan. Don't let it slip.
Right.
Yeah, I hear that.
It's a weird thing to go from this generation PlayStation from last gen, because I feel like they were so like ahead of brand messaging and so like on top of what people were saying and very reactive. And I think of like the Adam Boys video where he's handing Shuhei a game and they're like, this is how you share games on
here
PlayStation. And that was like the whole, like, they were just so like tongue-in-cheek about everything, and now they're just so radio silent that it just feels like a very different company, even though they're still producing the same high quality games. And like, we had the announcement this week that they acquired Housemarque, who made Returnal, which we gushed about on the show several months ago. But yeah, it's just kind of unclear what their plan is, and I agree with you guys, and it'll be interesting to see
how they
progress.
Thinking to myself that like companies that are based in like video game companies that are based in Japan, like some of them don't know how to do the North American like social influencer thing that all these other companies know how to do, and they're really stuck in their ways. I mean, look at what Nintendo did the morning of their show. They're like, hey, co-streaming, we might DMCA you. Only Nintendo would do that, and yet if you look at the stats of like how the showcases went, they had the most viewed showcase with no real co-streams. So they're saying we don't need people to co-stream our event, which is such like a non-North American Twitch thing of like, no, I'm gonna co-stream it to my four like members of my community, my 100 members of my community, whatever, but they're not playing by the rules and nobody seems to care. But I guess my rant is over. They just do things their own way, and it's not the way we do it, and it's very strange.
I think it's one of those things that they've found they don't have to. Like you said with Nintendo, it's like people will buy their game, people will come watch the trailer for their game as long as they put something out. And so if it ain't broke, why change?
I bought Mario Golf last week, but so they win.
I didn't pick it up. I was going to, and then all these reviews have me kind of like,
the reviews
sure,
are right.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of... I jumped in with Mario Tennis, and then I felt disappointed, so I was going to wait with this one. But
same.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I have one final question before we get to our closing segment, but just kind of thinking ahead, after watching this all-digital E3, now that we're talking about going back in person for events like PAX West and different conventions, what do you all think E3 2022 will look like? Will it be all digital? Will there be some sort of hybrid, all in person again? What do you think? Maybe starting with Jacob.
I think that E3 2022 will finally figure out how to do the general public. I mean, they've been in this weird space for the last like 4 years where they're like, hey, we're industry, but also like, come if you love video games, but there wasn't really anything for the general public. I think that they'll figure it out. I truly don't know why the ESA hasn't called ReadPop, the people who do PAX, and be like, hey, can you just run this show for us, please? I don't know why that hasn't happened yet, but here we are. E3 will be for the public. It'll finally be a show that makes sense for the public to go to. There will be a stage show. They'll probably keep it the same format. I hope that we get to a point where the schedule is a lot smaller. Jeff Keighley will continue to do Summer Game Fest. That fun land grab will continue to happen. Just remember, he's only been doing that show for really 2 years, and he's already made it like one of the tent poles of the E3 kind of week. So I could see a world where Jeff takes over June. That's just a weird thought. As far as in-person events, I mentioned that on E3 hybrid. Yeah, those are my thoughts.
Right on. How about you, Joseph?
Yeah, I have no clue. I still feel like the E3 or the ESA is a mess. That website that they launched, like the E3 website.
Did you go on it?
Creators or whatever. I did. It was an absolute nightmare. It was the biggest mistake. I keep getting spam emails from random game developers telling me to check out their game. I'm like, what is this? This still seems like a company that has no clue what they're doing. You know, granted, better than, you know, 2019 or whatever, but still kind of a mess. I think it's really just going to continue to be up to the big companies, the Sonys, the Microsofts, the Nintendos, the Ubisofts to figure out what they want to do, right? If Microsoft wants to go back and, you know, bring people to the theater, they'll do that, and that'll set the tone for everything else. I just want, you know, continuously compact, concise, very rewarding showcases in the future. I think it was a mistake to let a lot of these companies advertise like, oh, we're having a showcase, when it's really just a Zoom call, a PR Zoom call or whatever it is. Kind of felt like it wasted a lot of fans' time based on previous expectations from previous E3s. So I hope all of that stuff just kind of gets cleaned up. We get a more clear set of expectations going into the week. And I don't mind if it's in person. I mean, I've never been to E3 anyway, so I just want a cool, you know, presentation that I can watch streamed. So whether it's in person or not, I don't care that much. And, you know, I kind of look to PAX for my personal in-person experience. So whatever they do, I just hope it's polished and it translates well to the people watching at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just add one thing onto what Joseph said? Like,
yeah, please.
Like, we know the ESA lobbying board. I think what happened, and I think someone very much smarter than me said that, like, someone like a Capcom, they probably went to Capcom and said, like, hey, we're going to give you this spot on our show. If you don't use it, you lose it. And so that's how you end up with a situation like Capcom just announcing Resident Evil 8 DLC and just having some trailers otherwise. It's like they had to fill the space with something, so they filled it with Capcom and Verizon. So I'm really interested to see the show, I don't know who mentioned it, get even more compact and back to the week it used to be. Last year was a mess. Sure. It was a month. This year it was maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks-ish. I'd love for it to get back to it, like a really compact, beautiful week.
See, I heard that theory, and I don't understand that, right? Like, if you go to a, first of all, Capcom, Bethesda, they never had slots, or not Bethesda, like Gearbox, they never had slots anyway. We've never watched a Gearbox press conference, but, like, who's bigger than Capcom, Gearbox, Ubisoft, EA? If you say, hey, we're not going to give you a spot, who are you giving that spot to, right? Like, I don't understand that argument. Like, Capcom is big enough to say, hey, look, we're going to have big enough games that you're going to want us there regardless or not. We don't have anything to show, so we're not going to be there.
Right.
I think it's that easy. Like, if they're holding people hostage, that's kind of messed up. But also, I feel like it's kind of like a empty threat. So, I don't know.
I know the year the last year, so what would have been 2019, where they were in person, like, energy drink companies took over the E3, because if it's going to be for the public, they'll be like, cool, G Fuel is going to take that spot, right?
Wow.
So we're in a weird hybrid year where it's like, it needs to be in person, but it wasn't. But next year, I really look forward to like it being at the LA Convention Center, and like Sony won't have their spot, but like how many energy drink brands are going to be on the floor? I bet you it's more than one.
Interesting. Interesting. Lot to unpack. How about
time
you?
Will tell.
What do you think, Claire?
I think time will tell. I really don't. I think that thinking about it is just like, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? I just get overwhelmed. So I'm not.
There's a lot of
anything.
Moving pieces. I ultimately think I echo everyone's sentiments that I just hope it's a concise series of events that makes sense. I hope the companies and developers that are showcasing want to be showcasing and aren't forced into something that they don't want to do. I hope that showcases like the Wholesome Direct and the Guerrilla Collective and these different smaller showcases that got a lot of eyes, I think, on this all digital event continue to get a platform at an in-person E3 as these events evolve. And like you said, Jacob, I think like PAX has really like cultivated the way to create a really fun, magical experience for fans and non-media folks. So I hope that E3 can kind of find a middle ground when it's safe to do so. But yeah, I hope the future is bright going forward. And I think there's some good stuff to happen.
Yeah, I hope so too.
All right. Shall we move into questions with Claire for our closing segment? Any other E3 thoughts? Trailers we didn't talk about, things.
I had one thing.
You need to get off your...
We talked about the Wholesome Direct, but I also want to shout out the Playdate little thing. That was fun. I'm excited for the Playdate. It's for those who don't know, it's that little yellow console
so
with
cute.
A black and black screen, and then it's got a little crank on it with digital games that you get delivered on the console. Like, that showcase was cool. It was 20 minutes. They have so many like prominent game designers that are making cool BS for that thing. And I'm like, I'm super jacked for it. So more small things like that. Playdate, Wholesome Games. I loved that showcase.
For sure.
More stuff like that. But yeah, I wanted to call out Playdate because we hadn't talked about it.
Right on.
That's a great call out. Joseph, do you have anything else before we move on to our closing segment?
I'll just end with, I think next year might be, you know, have potential to be one of the best E3s we've seen in a long time.
Definitely.
If everything falls in place. So I'm excited.
For sure. All right, Claire, take it away.
All right. This week's question. So with the theme of summer vacation on our minds, if you could create a portal to travel to any video game universe, where would you go and why?
Does anyone want to jump in, or I can kick things off if we need a minute to think?
Start us off.
Okay. So mine actually ties into an indie game that we didn't get a chance to talk about that was shown at, I believe, the Guerrilla Collective showcase. But it's a game called Lake, and it's about a character named Meredith who travels back to her hometown to take a 2-week vacation. She's a high-powered corporate businesswoman who travels back to her hometown. It takes place in the 1980s, and she's taking this vacation to get away from her stressful life, and she's going to work as a postal worker for 2 weeks in her hometown. And there's dialogue options as you talk to the different townspeople and hear their different stories, so it's a very narrative-focused game, and it just looked really relaxing, and I was intrigued by all the different stories and characters they were setting up in the trailer, so I'm really excited for the game. But as I was reading this question, that kind of sparked some interest for me of, that just sounds like a nice relaxing time. She goes back to this lake town that she has from her childhood, these fond memories, visiting childhood friends, spending time at the lake, but also working day to day as a postal worker helping out the town. So I think I'd head out to the lake for right my on. Vacation.
Very fun.
How about you, Claire?
Sure. I'll go next. So I kind of have two answers. One for if your portal goes two ways and you can come back. And one if you have to stay.
Oh, that's a good way to take it.
So if you have to stay, I would love to go to like the Animal Crossing or Stardew Valley universe where you can just go somewhere and farm and do your own thing and live amongst the townspeople. And it's just relaxing and chill and good vibes all around. That sounds fun. If you could go and then come back, I would love to step in to the Elder Scrolls universe and run around the different provinces and stuff. I think that sounds really fun.
Do you have
get some cheese wheels, you know?
Do you have dragonborn powers in this scenario? Or are you
no.
shooting fire out of your hands?
No, okay. I would just walk up and be like a normal townsperson.
Gotcha. That's probably safer, you know?
Yeah.
If you want to come back from yeah. the vacation.
You know, find a random piece of armor lying around, and then when I put it on, because I'm a girl, it suddenly becomes 2 inches shorter around the midriff. I don't know. I just think it'd be cool to step into that fantasy world. So those are mine.
Nice.
I figured it out. I want to go to Kanto in the Pokemon universe.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's a good
that's
one.
That's cool.
Yeah. I want to be able to catch like adorable Pikachu, maybe an Eevee, go to Fuchsia City, fight the gym leader there. His name is Blaine. No, that's Blaine is Cinnabar Island. Koga, I think is his name. I just want to go to Pokemon. Pokemon would be great. Please let me go there.
Maybe you could do also some like wholesome safaris a la Pokemon yeah. Snap, taking some nice photos.
I want to throw rocks at a Kangaskhan. Yeah. Make him very angry. Hit me with a comet punch. It'd be bad. But like Pokemon, that's my answer.
That sounds
nice.
Awesome.
I like it. Joseph, how about for you?
Yeah, so I tried to keep it simple, you know. What will not get me killed? What will be a good time? Answer is simple, guys. Wii Sports Resort, send me to that world. You know what?
There you go.
I don't even know if I've ever
Woohoo
played
Island.
Wii Sports. I've never played Wii Sports Resort. I never bought that one. But it's a resort, and there are no enemies, so I think it's probably going to be a good time.
That
you can go,
too.
Like, kayaking and,
yeah,
like, hang
pretty.
Gliding and... Yeah, I think
yeah,
that's a good
that'd be,
one.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, no, wholesome.
Yeah, get fit.
Yeah, there you go.
Lots of exercise opportunities.
All right, well, I think that brings us to a close. Joseph and Jacob, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. It was a particularly special episode as Lukewarm Games is celebrating our 1-year anniversary today as of
Yay.
Recording this, so it was great to have you guys. Thank you. It's been a ton of fun, and we've gotten to meet amazing folks like both of you and collaborate on some really fun content together. So it's been rad. But in the meantime, can you let people know where to find you on the web and some of your content that you're working on?
Sure. I guess I'll start. You can find me at The Hoop Man on Twitter, Instagram, where the E is a 3. Obviously, I host a show called Player. You guys can find that on all podcasting platforms. Just go to playerplayerpod.com. You guys can see, get links to all the different shows. You guys can learn about us. playerplayerpod.com/discord if you guys want to join the conversation, have a good time, talk about video games. And that's it.
Awesome. Listeners, go do it. Jacob, how about for you? What are you working on?
The Player Player Podcast is a great show that I do not make.
Thanks.
But you please go listen to it. I make too many things. I host a show called The Left Behind Game Club. It is a video game book club podcast that releases every other week. We are just wrapping up our Hitman 2 series. If you like informative and entertaining conversations about video games, check us out on all major podcasting platforms. I host a show called Cutscenes. It is a video game movie podcast that's seasonal. We're just actually recording season 3 right now. It'll be out later this year. If you like people that like to have yuck fun times talking about video game movies, please check us out. Most of them are bad, but this show is good. And I also host video game trivia on Twitch every Wednesday at around 9 p.m. Eastern. Joseph has been on the show. Y'all will be on the show in the future, I promise.
We're very excited.
It's on YouTube as well. So, like, I do lots of things. Follow them all on my Twitter at Jacob McCourt, JACOBMCCOURT. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, awesome. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive episodes and more. You can follow at lukewarmgames on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.